Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Suji DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is Evan Basilik, and we are here on April 28th, recording episode number 375. We're going to be talking about dangling domains with Justin Moorfield. I've got Cynthia and Sajit are here. Before we get to Justin, let's talk about some news.
For sure. So I have a couple updates to share. One is really update, and two are really events. There is Build coming up in May, and again, it will be virtual and free. So definitely recommend everyone to register. There's going to be a bunch of awesome sessions that's going on. There's also an event for Azure SQL that is on May 4th. Build is on May 25th. So definitely mark your calendars for those events. And then there's also another update regarding new SKUs of Azure VMs that are coming up. They are a progression of the DV SKU and the EV SKU. DV is more general purpose. EV is more, I think, memory intensive. So definitely take a look at them. They are in preview, so definitely won't recommend putting production workloads on them. But I think it's coming out in preview in some specific regions, and they are meant to be more powerful than the old VM SKUs.
Let me share something on this here. So typically, right, the whenever we see the, you know, V2 to V3, V3 to V4 and so forth, that's because we're getting new generations of the underlying hardware. And so what that means correspondingly is we will get less and less and less and less new hardware of the old SKUs. So one of the things that I always recommend to customers when we talk about the versions, right, you don't have to jump on V5 today, and it's not like, you know, V3 or V2 is going away tomorrow. But if you have workloads that you're running that, you know, you have never tested with the later versions, right, you should always be thinking about that. And unless you have some guideline that says you must be on, you know, V2 for some technical reason or whatever, whenever you create new workloads, I always recommend you go to the latest GA SKU, because that sort of gives you the longest lifetime. It's sort of like when you install, you know, a Linux OS or a Windows OS on a new machine, like you're probably not doing yourself any favors doing that with a really old build, right? Because you're going to have to upgrade at some point. So better to do it now, unless there's a technical blocker for you.
And I guess there's also the question of quotas, right? That they would have.
Absolutely.
If you try to spin up 100 of them, and there's less likely that 100 of those old SKUs are available in your region.
Correct. Yeah. Now, we don't typically talk in that low number, so she's just making up a low number. Yes, there's only 100, you know, blah V2s in all of Azure. No, but yeah, your point's valid, Suji. Like, it's, you know, it's just harder and harder to get that old hardware because, you know, can't get it, right? So there's sort of limited capacity and stuff ages out, right? Things like that. So, okay, great. No, that's a good roundup. At this point, you know, so Justin, if you could introduce yourself, share what you do for, you know, here at Microsoft, and then explain what the heck is a dangling domain. Like, I know what a domain is. What's a dangling domain?
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me onto the podcast. I really appreciate it. So my name is Justin Moorfield. I'm a program manager within Azure CXP, customer reliability engineering team. So similar to Evan, slightly different group within that team. And so what I focus on predominantly is the security incidents that impact our products, sending communications to whoever is impacted by that. And so with subdomains, it's kind of an interesting security issue because it's not product specific or Azure even specific. This is something that can happen with any type of resource that creates its own domain when you provision it. And so I guess the easiest way that I've found to describe this is looking at it as if your house is your main domain and each room within that house is a subdomain. Now, when you're looking at your house, the blueprint for that house, which is your DNS zone, knows that your rooms are just labeled room one, room two, whatever. And it's a colloquial, or it's a you know, technical jargony name. And that's the equivalent to like your FQDN for whatever resource you provisioned. So when we look at our home, though, we don't look at it as room one, room two, or whatever the FQDN is of the resource that created that room. We look at it with the common name that we give it, the bedroom, a kitchen. This would be like assigning a CNAME record in your DNS zone pointing to that FQDN. So essentially, when you have all of your different rooms, all of your different subdomains, and you now no longer need one of those rooms, let's say you're getting rid of one of your bedrooms, so you deprovision that resource and it's gone, you need to then go and update your blueprint that says, hey, I don't have this room anymore. And if you don't, then it still shows that you have a room, which creates what's called a dangling domain, because that CNAME record still exists in your DNS zone, but there's no resource behind it to actually host a site. And so that's what a dangling DNS entry is, or a dangling domain.
So let me try and restate that, because I like that analogy. It sounds a lot like when my, you know, my kids keep wanting their bedrooms to stay their bedrooms. What it sounds like you're saying is, so we had a pointer to a resource. Mm-hmm. We no longer have that resource, but that pointer is sitting out there somewhere where somebody else can grab it.
Exactly.
And now they can put whatever they want underneath it.
Exactly. And so that then presents the opportunity for what's called a subdomain takeover, which is exactly what you're getting at, is they can take that pointer, because you still show. So, for instance, if I created the subdomain justin-dev.contoso@azurewebsite.net, and I no longer have the resource that is providing that subdomain, that pointer to my site, that justin.dev website, or that URL is still alive. People could still try to go to it, but it would just give them, you know, an error that there's nothing there. But what can happen is bad actors, just bad people in general, can kind of look across the internet and find these dangling domains, or look for blueprints of homes that are showing there's a room, and then go and check if it actually exists. If they find that the domain, the subdomain, is no longer there, they get that error, or that, you know, in theory, the room doesn't exist, then they can go and essentially pull a trailer up and plop it on your home and say, hey, this is the subdomain. This is the room that your customers are trying to enter. But they control everything within that. And so going back to the technical aspect of this, this would be a customer creating a resource with the same name, so that your pointer, your CNAME, now routes any traffic that was intended for your site to the site that they maintain and they host the content for. And from there, they can do whatever they want, right? Phishing attacks, try to issue you malware, take any kind of malicious action against you there.
So Justin, you know, we have a couple of domains, I think, our podcast, azpodcast.com, et cetera. So we have to deal with them occasionally. I know there's typically all sorts of protections on domains, right? And who can make changes and whatnot. So are you saying that that doesn't apply over here, those kind of protections that you have on your DNS provider, whoever, GoDaddy or whoever, Microsoft DNS, whoever you use?
So this is interesting, because it is essentially hijacking what exists. So your protections may still be existent in your DNS, but if there's no resource to back the CNAME record, that pointer where customers are trying to navigate their traffic to, then they essentially hijack it and subvert any kind of preventative controls that you may have, and creating a site in their own subscription or their own account and just leveraging that CNAME record in your DNS zone. So it kind of subverts and hijacks it.
So the IP address that was pointing to that subdomain originally, they are going to host something on that same IP address. Is that how this works? I'm trying to understand like how exactly the hijacking works.
Yeah, so I think it would be technically a different IP address, because what they do is, so if I'm customer, you know, I have my justin-dev .azure website subdomain, and I deprovision that, all that's left now is the CNAME records that would route traffic to it. And the new, whoever that malicious actor is, they create the resource in their own account and their own subscription that has the same name. And that will allow the traffic that should be intended for your site to be routed to them. So I think in theory, it would be a different IP address. Technically, it would be routed to.
This kind of reminds me of like learning dangling pointers. When we first learned about like different, like what Evan mentioned earlier. And so is the best way to approach it to first delete the the pointer and then delete the underlying resources so that you don't run into the scenario? Or what should we do about it?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So truly with dangling domains, one of the best, you know, actions that you can take is finding a good kind of SOP for deprovisioning these resources that have subdomains. So that way you have some sort of playbook for cleaning them up. And so, yeah, exactly. It's cleaning up your dangling pointers. So in what we have provided as guidance to customers is that either before you deprovision that resource, you remove the CNAME record, that pointer, or shortly after deprovisioning the resource, you remove that CNAME pointer. Some customers, because they will take down a resource to do some sort of maintenance or update it, whatever have you, that CNAME can become dangling for a very short period of time. And what we've actually seen is that occasionally people have scooped up and taken over that domain in the minutes that it took somebody to do an update. And so that's where it may be beneficial to remove the CNAME and then deprovision the resource. But in the inverse of that, of, you know, as long as you're going after, you go and deprovision that resource, you do remove the pointer, then that does remove any kind of risk of a subdomain takeover. And so that's what we've been suggesting.
Well, you know, you and I, when we first started talking about this a while back, one of the things that, you know, there were some conversations going on is around, you know, what we at the platform are doing to, you know, sort of make this more robust. Because your point about, you know, somebody taking over this domain and the minutes between when I click over here, you know, or execute the CLI command and then go get my cup of coffee and then come back and execute the other one, that, like, that's something you're only going to be able to drive that down to a relatively small time. It's probably never going to be zero. So what are we doing at the platform level to, you know, make this easier for customers to manage and help control this?
Yeah, there's a couple of different things, and I'll go into the shorter term fix, and then I'll go into the longer term one. So shorter term, we're creating a feature what's called the name reservation service. And so essentially, when you go and create any kind of subdomain and you you've done any kind of work with that, and now you're at the point where you need to deprovision it, what we'll do is we'll tie the domain name, that subdomain name, to you all, or to the customer rather. So that way it is locked to them for up to 30 days. Now it depends on the resource. Some resource providers are it depends on the type of subscription the customer is using. So if you're using a free trial subscription or a pay-as-you-go, that name will be reserved for 7 days. If you're using if you have like an EA agreement or one of the field-wide agreement types with our subscriptions, then that name will be reserved for up to 30 days. And so what that'll do is it'll alleviate that chance that somebody is going to come in and scoop up the domain immediately as soon as you deprovision it, give you a couple of days to either go clean up your CNAMEs and your DNS zone, or reprovision a resource to take over that pointer again. And so that's the number one, I guess, shorter term fix that we're doing. Because it doesn't solve it, right? It doesn't prevent it entirely. All it does is it's a temporary band-aid that will help customers, when they deprovision something, prevent their domain from being taken over. So what we want to do is we want to try to make customers invulnerable to this, right? So the longer term fix for this is what's called deterministic naming conventions. And so this will be required of all new resource providers that are going to be onboarding into Azure in the future. And then it is highly recommended for all current resource providers, whereas the name reservation service is required right now for all resource providers to onboard currently. So deterministic naming will be a more thorough preventative measure, because what it does is it looks at the individual unique identifiers a customer has, their subscription ID, their tenant ID, things like that. And then it hashes the domain name that you all create for your resource along with your identifiers to create a customer unique value. And that will be what is the domain name that gets assigned, or that the CNAME is assigned to and points to. So when a customer would then deprovision that resource, that hash, that domain name.
Oh, it's never going to match ever again. Oh, gotcha.
Used by somebody because it is created and unique to that customer. And so with that, you know, it builds up some other capabilities for customers too. You can enforce how many times a hash domain name can be reused through Azure policy. Can it be reused, and in what frequency it can be? That's the longer tail item that they're shooting for in engineering, both from DNS and then all the new resource providers that will be coming on board. So that way we can truly try to prevent this at scale for all customers.
And just to clarify, Cynthia, before you jump in with your question, the resource provider for us is what maps to a particular service. So Azure App Services has its own resource provider. Compute, you know, has its own resource provider, right? That's sort of the underlying APIs and infrastructures that are wrappers around these services and these components.
Yeah, thank you, Evan. Yeah, the resource provider, I roughly equivalent in my head to a service, so.
Yep.
That was something I was going to clarify, too. No worries. Justin, I'm curious, from like a user or a customer perspective, are there any monitoring tools that I can see from a holistic perspective of like, oh, I have these outlying subdomains that I need to clean up? Or is this something that I, as a consumer, like I should be keeping track of this myself and that I should be diligent during my process to keep note of like what is out there and what should be cleaned up?
Yeah. So, you know, don't get me wrong. I would love it if everybody was able to keep 100% tabs on everything that should be cleaned up. But with large organizations, it's probably not a realistic thing. So we understand there's massive DNS zones. There could be any number of records that you do or don't know are dangling. So what we did was we worked with some engineering folks to create a script that you can run, and it's hosted in the networking security GitHub repo under cross products. And I'll provide the link and everything for you guys to post when this is posted or when the episode is posted. But what it will do is it allows you to either, if you're using Azure DNS, run the script, and you specify the subscriptions hosting your DNS zone, and it'll search across that DNS zone for any records without with null pointers. Alternatively, if you don't use Azure DNS, totally okay. What you can do is export your DNS zone into a CSV and upload it into the script as well, and then it'll return the same values. And there's some good README files on how to use that script and everything in the GitHub as well. But that's, I would say, if you're trying to find what you have today dangling, that would probably be the number one area that I would go to. And then from there, you know, if you're able to start building out SOPs and things internal to your company to help prevent them, that's great.
And Justin, in case you do get into a situation where one of your domains or subdomains has been taken over by a malicious actor, what should the next steps be for the customer? What's the remediation steps from then on?
Yeah, so there's two things you can do. Number one, and the fastest and easiest resolution, is just remove your CNAME from your DNS zone. Because when you remove that pointer, then it effectively breaks that chain with that malicious actor, and no traffic is then going to be routed to it. Alternatively, and something that has a slower uptake and kind of response because it takes some investigation, but you can report it to there's our MSRC, the Microsoft security team, where if you found somebody that is impersonating your website, you can report it there, and they'll go and investigate. And if that customer is violating terms of use, then we can send them notifications and potentially go and take that site down. That being said, when you file a request to the security team, you may not get any kind of response back. They go and take that indication that something's going wrong, somebody's doing something bad, and they go and investigate it. But because of privacy, they can't necessarily come back to you as a customer and say, hey, we took action. So just being aware of that and kind of setting expectations that you may not get response back, but somebody will investigate. I can promise that.
And I have to ask, I see your T-shirt says Azure for elections. So, you know, I was going to ask you, what does that mean?
Azure for Elections program was something that we spun up to support customers who were running some sort of elections-related solution for the 2016 and 2020 elections, just kind of focusing on helping ensure that they have stability in their solutions and that if something does go wrong, they have some sort of impactful outage, we have folks there to engage quickly and get them back online.
Thank you. So what's next for this dangling DNS? I know you've given us some previews to what's coming up. Is there like a timeline you can publicly talk about when this is this already available, for example, in some sort of preview way?
Yeah, so right now we're looking at having the name reservation service and all the resource service providers onboarded to that by the end of this next semester. So hopefully by September of this year, everybody will be onboarded to that. The deterministic naming, because it does involve changes to the experience that a customer has when they provision a resource, deprovision it, things like that, it's going to take some longer term investments. And so I'm not sure entirely on the roadmap for that and when it'll be completed. But there's active investments already to create the underlying infrastructure for the service or for the feature. And then it'll just be a process of onboarding services to that. Right now, though, for the name reservation service, that's something that some resources are already onboarded to. And what that entails is there's no definitive change to the way a customer provisions deprovisions. So there's no experience difference. It simply is when you deprovision that resource, the name is reserved. And that just that happens on the back end. Now, some of the cool things that we're looking to add on from this is once everybody is fully onboarded to name reservation, it provides a better venue which we can build other product improvements based off of it. So, for instance, when you deprovision a resource right now, it would be great if your activity log or Azure Monitor could pick that up and detect if there's a CNAME record that correlates to that resource and flags it for you so that way you can go and clean it up. Built some sort of automation either based on application logs or something in Azure Monitor where you can find these. Right now, we do have active investments going on to build ASC or Azure Security Center alerts for dangling or subdomain takeovers. But right now, it's focused on if you use Azure DNS. So we're looking to see if we can pivot that to where there can be some sort of indicators if you don't use Azure DNS as well. So those are some of the nearer term ones. Really, that long-term deterministic naming is going to be the highest value add to customers because it will indefinitely protect a subdomain from being taken over by somebody else.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, this was great, Justin. Cynthia, any last questions from you? Okay. Awesome, Justin. Yeah, I mean, it's great to hear that we both sort of have a short-term plan and some best practices, but then we're, you know, putting in the engineering work to make sure that long-term this is just easier for customers to manage. Okay, great. Any last thoughts for the audience?
The only last thought I'll have is if you're still unsure really about dangling domains, you want to read more, find out other about the services that could result in a domain becoming dangling, we do have a very robust documentation page on it, and I'll make sure that I include the link with this one. But I highly encourage you to read over that. And there's links to the GitHub repository with the script and everything in there too. So that'd be the final piece that I have to throw out for advice and helpful hints.
Okay. Sounds great. Thanks, Justin. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you all. It was a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.